This is Anguttara Nikaya 4, Sutta 242. Benefits of a good person. Bhikkhus, by relying on a good person, four benefits are to be expected. What for? One grows in noble virtuous behavior. One grows in noble concentration. One grows in noble wisdom. And one grows in noble liberation. By relying on a good person, these four benefits are to be expected. So these first three of the four, the virtuous behavior, the concentration, and the wisdom, so that's like sila, samadhi, and panya. You probably recognize that. And then the last one is noble liberation. Now, as to the virtuous behavior, for lay people that normally kind of expands into the five precepts, right? Avoiding killing, stealing, lying, sexual misconduct, and drinking and drugs, which lead to carelessness. And when I think back to my lay life in Canada, before I ordained, I came from a part of Canada which we call Western Canada, even though it's, if you look at the map, it's kind of right in the middle where I'm from, but that still gets called Western Canada. And basically the middle of Canada and everywhere to the west of that, that's all Western Canada. And it's characterized, usually anyway, by quite a liberal culture. And the reason I mention this is the moral standards were not all that carefully followed by most people. Like if you go through those five precepts, virtually everybody's breaking something on that list, if not two or three or four things. So it's not easy for a Buddhist monk like me to go there and kind of like speak in praise of these five precepts, because everybody's like, who can do that? As though it's impossible, you know, in that culture. I guess I'd have not met enough lay people here, but you would know in your own lives. Think of your family and friends, coworkers. How many people around you can actually follow those five precepts? Who's doing it? It's kind of an interesting thought exercise. And now, if there's not really many people you know who can do it, let's not be kind of judgmental or sort of like pessimistic, or maybe even a little depressed how hard it is, but rather it's a chance to kind of reflect on, well, this is actually a challenge. The Buddha is actually challenging us to do something that's hard to do. And there's a big benefit that we get from it if we can. This has a lot to do with where we're going to go next after we die. So this is actually a big deal in Buddhism. It can have a huge impact. So I would say thinking it over, taking the time to think it over is worth it, very worth it. And see if we can make any changes in our lives towards that. And I feel that although the people around us may not really appreciate it, if we can make those changes, you know, the people around us might be so busy with their own lives. They have their own agenda, they have their own views, they have their own interests, they have their own lifestyle. And sometimes people don't really stop to appreciate when people around them are doing that right. You might feel like nobody appreciates you when you can do it. But I say nonetheless, it's important to do, even though you feel like you're not getting acknowledged maybe. You might not be getting the gratitude you deserve. But I say do it anyway. And there will be those who actually do notice it. And they might actually find that really inspiring. And when those people do notice it, that says something about them actually. That's like, hey, they have kind of a moral compass where they can detect this. It says something about their moral compass working at least somewhat when they appreciate this, right? It says something about what they appreciate. I say that is a bit of a measurement of character. It's like, what are people's moral compasses like? We have this phrase, a moral compass. You know, think of a compass. It points to the north, the south, east, west, and it. We use it to guide ourselves, or at least before smartphones, that's what you would do. If you went hiking way off in the woods, you'd bring a compass. It's way too easy now with the GPS, but unless you're in Kuala Lumpur, then you need a GPS or you won't make it. I was in Kuala Lumpur pretty recently, and anytime we would drive anywhere, the roads were such a tangly nightmare that I'm like, how did people even survive before GPS? It was like noodles of spaghetti in a bowl. This is still a nice analogy. There's a moral compass. Maybe they'll have to say moral GPS in the future. But anyway, something which guides us. It's a guiding tool almost, right? So I would say, please try to appreciate the people in your life who can keep those precepts. And if someone shows an ability to appreciate this when they see it, maybe they don't have it themselves, but they're kind of tuning into it, at least in a way where they can. They don't just walk by and not notice. They don't just ignore it. They notice it. That says something about people and their character. I am definitely finding myself, as I get a little older, I can't help but admit that that's a life skill, is to kind of tune into other people's character over time, once you get to know them. All kinds of trouble can happen in your life if you spend too little effort, too little energy. It's not wise if we don't look at other people's character around us. Now, let's not get too judgmental. That's also a mistake. But it's also a mistake when you pay too little attention to people's character. That leads to all kinds of problems. I could tell you many stories in my own life. But, you know, maybe I'll just leave it here. And yeah, so I've left you with a little bit of homework as to like thinking over people's character, thinking over who can follow the five precepts, or can I do it? And without getting too judgmental, maybe this will help you appreciate people in your life more that you might have passed over otherwise. Maybe I'll leave you with one quick little story. So there's this really, really difficult book called Night. The title's just Night, and it has to do with in World War II when the Jews were taken to the concentration camps. It's a really, really dark book because of all the bad stuff that happened to them. But there is this really inspiring part at the beginning. And there's a character who apparently was a real person. This is not supposed to be a fiction. And his name was Moshe the Beadle. Moshe, M-O-S-H-E. And his job was to be a beadle, B-E-A-D-L-E. That's a job. So he's kind of like the usher in a church. But the church isn't Christian. It's a Jewish synagogue. So this Moshe the Beadle was this old man. He was a very humble, good-natured man. He wasn't even the priest or the rabbi or anything. He was the usher. He had a very lowly position. But he never harmed anyone. He was super great character. His integrity was really good. And there was this window of time for about 2 weeks before the Nazis began to actually take the Jews away in the trains, where you did have a bit of a chance to escape if you listened to the reports, the rumors. If you listen to the town gossip, there was gossip around about all the bad stuff happening. But virtually everybody was like, that won't happen to us. That doesn't apply to us. Surely that can't happen to us. They were all in denial of what was going to come next. But this Moshe the Beadle, his integrity was so good. And his character was so solid that he listened. He listened to those warnings and he escaped. And he was one of the very, very few who ever did this, at least in that town. He totally got away, and then the Nazis showed up and rounded up everybody and put him in the trains. And this Moshe the Beatles kind of elevated to be almost like a bit of an angel or a saint, although very humble. And he was like kind of delivered from that evil. Anyway, that was very inspiring for me, where it made me think over how, even if you're kind of humble and have a lowly position, if you get delivered from the bad results, the bad stuff, that made it all worth it. Okay. All right, I'll end it there.
Change.